making this, and it looks like it's gonna work. Nope. Okay. Well, while it's loading, I will introduce myself. My name is Barbara James, and Lyle and I are absolutely delighted to be here this afternoon to share with you the National Community Centers of Excellence in Women's Health experience establishing centers without walls to deliver comprehensive, integrated, multidisciplinary, and culturally appropriate care to women and their families. I know that's a mouthful, but that is the model that we started out with. These comprehensive integrated models of care cross the borders of age, race, ethnicity, and culture to deliver care to immigrant and other American women living in border states, on islands, in the inner city, and in rural areas. These centers truly delivered health care without borders by integrating a five-component model that I'll discuss with you in a little more detail later in the presentation. Let me say that in 2001, the Office on Women's Health contracted with Booz Allen and Hamilton to conduct a baseline evaluation of our CCOE program. And in 2005, the OWH again engaged Booz Allen and Hamilton to conduct a comparison study of the CCOE program. And the results of these evaluations underpin today's presentation. Today, we will point to the CCOE and discuss how the CCOEs were instrumental in improving access to services for multicultural populations through integrated models of care at the community level. Now, do I make it? Lau told me we had to show this sign, so this slide, so I put it up here for you, but we'll move on to the presentation. The objectives of our presentation today are to describe strategies for increasing access to and integration of women's healthcare services for diverse and underserved populations, to describe a framework for evaluating comprehensive integrated models of care using a multi-data source. And this was really kind of interesting and challenging because it was a multi-component model of care. And Lyle will talk about that more in detail during his presentation. We also want to present lessons learned, best practice, and sustainability strategies for improving and maintaining community-based care. Now, the Office of Women's Health funded the first CCOEs in 2000, and between 2000 and 2005, we funded 14 five-year awards. They were made to community-based organizations, community health centers, community hospitals, and one area health education center in 14 states. The purpose of these awards were for them to develop comprehensive, multidisciplinary, integrated care delivery systems to provide medical, mental health, dental, and social services to women. So we didn't ask a lot of these centers, as you can see. The centers that successfully completed the five-year awards graduated to what we call an Ambassador for Change program. At a reduced level of funding, they were still required to maintain the five components of the CCOE program, plus develop technical assistance or offer technical assistance to other organizations that were interested in improving their women's healthcare services. So let's look at the women that were served by these centers. As you can see from the language spoken, that the centers serve a very diverse population. The 48% of the women that we served through the centers were white. The average age was 41. 34% were on Medicaid. 58% had a let's try that again. 58% had a household income of $20,000 or less. 40% had some high school education or were high school graduates, and 16% were Hispanic. The components that the centers had to put in place were comprehensive and integrated care delivery systems for women, and we call them care delivery systems because it extended beyond medical care. We offered training for lay and professional health care providers. We had community-based research, which was very new for a number of the community-based organizations, public education and outreach, leadership development for women as healthcare consumers and providers, technical assistance, and replication of the CCOE model in another organization and another community. However, the most important requirement was the integration of all of these components. And this integration led to the breaking down of barriers to care and also allowed us to cross borders and provide comprehensive services. Now Lyle will discuss some of the key findings from the evaluation and the lessons learned.
Thank you, Barbara. What I hope to cover will be a high-level overview of the methodology and discuss, again, at a high level some of the findings and best practice. I see some of you are taking notes like crazy. We do have handouts that go into more detail in the back as well. But I think a little more background. What we really found were that these organizations really came from very diverse backgrounds. As Barbara mentioned, they were rural, they were urban, a lot of diverse population. Each of the organizations is structured around their own unique community, whether it was health needs, whether it were resources, geography, or the community demographics. And all employed three basic strategies to try to achieve their goals, an integrated, comprehensive approach. They tried to leverage the designation of a center of excellence, and they employed a culturally competent approach. And all this was done in an effort to really reduce those, or eliminate, if possible, those boundaries or barriers within the community that were existing there, and then also within the sponsoring organization and frequently between other organizations that were partners, and then finally between and among the cultures that were in the community. We also found that each of these organizations implemented a very unique structure and approach, blend of services to fit the needs of their individual communities. A little bit about our methodology. We conducted the initial baseline evaluation in 2003. At that point in time, there were 12 organizations that were participating. The length of time that they had been involved in the program ranged anywhere from 1 to 3 years. Basically, they came in cohorts each year. Some number were added. We did a comparative evaluation in 2007. At that point in time, there were 14 organizations. Some of them had gone through their 5 years of grant time frame and were at that point the ambassadors for change. Our approach included a multiple primary and secondary data sources. We did a combination of internet, paper-based, and face-to-face interviews. So, for example, we did internet surveys with the CCOE directors and their program coordinators. We also did internet surveys with the partners. We had paper-based surveys that went out to over 1,600 clients, and this is all for 2007, by the way. We also did 13 site visits, and on those site visits, we did focus groups. We did one-on-one interviews, again, with the directors and the program coordinators, also some group interviews with staff, and then we also went to the partner sites to do additional interviews and follow-ups. We were also able to access data from the quarterly reports that each of the grantees had to submit to the Office on Women's Health. So what did we find? At a very high level, we found that the program did have an impact on both the clients and the community, that the variety of services that were offered and were coordinated increased pretty dramatically, not only in terms of the healthcare services, but also the additional support and social services. And as far as the kind of cultural issues that we banged into, they were there, as evidenced by the languages that Barbara pointed to earlier. What we found in our survey, that 97% of those folks that were interviewed indicated that they were able to speak with someone at the CCOE in their primary or native language, which was pretty impressive. We also found that these programs were able to increase awareness beyond the reproductive health that traditionally is thought about with women, basically through a holistic approach. There was an increased focus on the chronic diseases, for example, cardiovascular, and also went beyond treatment to prevention programs. And again, as I mentioned, they offered a wide variety of support programs. They also tried to facilitate, and successfully did so, facilitate women as informed consumers and decision makers. And that was done through a variety of outreach programs, a variety of educational efforts, as well as things like resource directories. So in essence, partnerships were developed and leveraged to expand and offer a wider range of services. The community was brought in not only to the hosting or sponsoring organization, but into the entire program, and the impact on that was really changing how services were delivered. Talk a little bit about how those partnerships went beyond the traditional healthcare providers, got into academic research organizations, mental health, really worked with organizations around domestic violence. There were things like daycare offered, transportation, and a whole variety of other services. And through the ongoing interactions with the partners, there was a trust that was built up, the communication was improved, and it really resulted in an improved support and coordination of services. I think and that really resulted in some unexpected and beneficial kinds of things. For example, one of the things that the groups tried to do was really facilitate referrals. And what we found was frequently that resulted in same day or next day access to the organizations that they were referring. And the other thing was, as these grant programs came to an end, and I think we all know grant programs eventually do that, that many of these partner organizations really stepped up to make sure that parts of the program were carried on, or they contributed to that effort to continue the programs and so forth. And when we did the final, as we were in the data collection for the final piece of this evaluation, the funding had just ended. So in some cases we were there 3 or 4 months after, and so we're looking at kind of what went on. So let me talk a little bit about, you know, some of the best practices that we saw. We really saw a focus on three areas, and one of them was really those community partnerships, strengthening and developing those and identifying new ones. And there was a surprising amount of focus on achieving sustainability, continuing the programs after the grants ended, and then systems change. So in the coordination with community partners, what we found were that the sponsoring agency, or the agency that actually got the grant, would not have been able to produce or provide a large number of the services that actually ended up being provided, that by partnering with those other organizations, they were really able to offer a wider variety of services. Interesting also, in a number of these organizations were very rural and really hadn't been involved much in the research arena. But I'll give you a couple of examples of what we did find. One of the partnerships connected with the university to conduct research. They actually obtained external funding, and it was really gave them the ability to emphasize that there was a much greater need for access to healthcare in rural Kansas. But they particularly focused their efforts around obesity and depression and mental health within the rural communities. In another organization, they became part of a research project investigating, and I always have a hard time saying this one, cultural variation in intimate partner violence. They also were successful in getting grants for their research. In conjunction with the university, they have published some articles on their findings and have also presented at a number of conferences. Getting close, huh? 3 minutes. Okay. Talk a little bit about also about the advisory board and how the organization successfully used that. These advisory boards were made up organizations in the community, individuals, and so forth. And what they this really provided this the programs with the opportunity to introduce new healthcare providers or other organizations, the opportunity to be exposed to other folks that were looking to expand their reach. And it was really through this that community partners that hadn't had previous relationships with the program or the organization were really able to get introduced and be leveraged into supporting the program. Leveraging the CCOE designation, probably my favorite story there, and this is in a rural area, I believe in Kansas, where when the staff were there interviewing some of the folks, there was a woman physician who indicated that one of the primary reasons that she came to that particular rural facility had to do with them being designated a CCOE in that particular model of care. And so they really were able to do a number of things successfully in that fashion. The other thing that we found was the diversity of the client population that these organizations served continued to change pretty dramatically. For example, there was one organization, I believe it was in Connecticut, that when we went there in 2003, there was almost no immigrant population there. It was a pretty much homogeneous area. When we went back in 2007, discovered that there had been a major immigration of folks from Eastern Europe. And so that program had actually hired some translators. They had also hired some folks or got volunteers that were familiar with that culture so that they were able to go out and effectively deliver service. Also things, very large Hmong population in Minneapolis, believe it or not, a very high Hispanic population in the middle of Kansas. The other thing was providing an opportunity for leadership for a number of these women and also weaving into that some of the cultural idiosyncrasies of the various groups or the cultural differences. One group, for example, really set up leadership opportunities for the women in their promotora program, where they went out and actively sought Spanish-speaking women in the community to become these home health workers. And then they actually went back into the community to provide education to the clients and not necessarily just the health education kinds of things, but they got into financial management, they got into you know, things about employment, so a whole variety of different kinds of things to get out there and really make sure that there was a level of comfort with the organization from the clients and potential clients. Last example that I'll give, and this was in New Mexico, that particular CCOE became very active in the Governor's Women's Health Advisory Council and actually did a presentation to that council on the CCOE model. After that presentation and some additional discussion, the state of New Mexico adopted five of the components of the CCOE model as their health care delivery model for the state. So some very effective things. This overall program was really a relatively lengthy and complex process. This 15 or 20 minutes really can't do it justice. So I guess there are two things. One of them is on the website here, the phase one report, the 2003 report, is accessible through this web link. The report on phase two is now going through the approval process at HHS. Hopefully that will be uploaded on the site by the end of this year. For those of who of you who don't want to wait that long, there are some additional handouts in addition to this presentation that give a little bit more of some of the details on our findings and our methodologies, and they're in the back there, so please feel free to take them. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, we'll go directly into the next presentation, but I'm sure we have questions about the evaluation of community-based participatory research, but we'll hold those until the end. Okay, our next presentation is by Destiny Lopez, and she's with the Executive Committee of Women Lead for Health, which is a statewide coalition based here in California. And she's also the Executive Director of Access, Making Choice a Reality.
Hi, everyone.